Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
As always, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor. Yeah, it is an honor. Thank you very much for joining. This is where we celebrate industry heroes right here. This is their voice. We celebrate the women and men of industry, the women and men of manufacturing, and all things in between. That's what we do. That's why we celebrate you, because you're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly, your voice has to be heard, your story has to be told, and that's why the Industrial Talk Podcast is, I guess, the only place for you to go for all the leaders in industry. Speaking of which, Bill Shimarzo, absolute titan of data, is on the Industrial Talk Podcast. Let's get a Kraken. As a dude, man. Shimarzo. So, what makes him so great? Outside of the fact that he's got a lot of hair. I don't. It's the fact that he is an absolute... He thinks young. And he's got this major street cred in data analytics, all things data, big, whatever. He's the dean of big data. That's what he is. And but he thinks young, and he recognizes that youth is really the key to unlocking innovation, along with all the other things. But he's always fascinated, and as well as I am, but he's fascinated with how young professionals solve problems and leverage innovation and develop new innovative solutions to solving problems. That's Bill Shimarzo, and we have a great conversation. Now, it's all in line with what we're trying to do, so I want you to get your paper and pencil out right now. I want you to lock these dates in, the 2nd and 3rd of December. And this is with IoT Solutions World Congress. Fear not. It'll be out there on Industrial Talk, the links and everything that you need to know. It's a virtual event, and I've been very honored and fortunate enough to be able to run a panel. Now, this panel is going to include Bill, Rob Tiffany, Stephanie Atkinson, and what we're going to be talking about is how this digital journey is not just transforming business and industry and people's lives here, but how is this digital journey improving the lives of communities that might not have the resources that we do here in the United States and other places within the world. How is that? How is this incredible revolution, this Industry 4.0 revolution, impacting and helping them out and everything that you could possibly imagine? How do we do that? What do we do? I'm of the opinion, definitely, that... that this will transform lives even in those areas. Because I think because of leaders like Bill and others, they're able to see the necessity of making technology and innovation consumable by everybody around the world. He's thrown out some really incredible cutting-edge thought pieces that, I don't know, I just think he's brilliant. And I know that you'll believe the same thing. Now, here we are. I want you again to go out to IoT Solutions World Congress. That's IoTS World Congress. I'll give you the link, the URL, and put down the 2nd and 3rd of December. Join this virtual conference. Hear this panel. We're going to be promoting it pretty dramatically, just because I think this is information that you, as professionals, need to hear. All right, you don't have to worry about Bill Shimarzo, because he's got a major stat card out there, and he is absolutely has a desire to just reach out. He's an amazing man. He's a great man. So go out to Bill Shimarzo, S-C-H-M-A-R-Z-O. You'll find him. There's not many out there. Dean of Big Data. All right, let's get on with the interview. We had, once again, he's throwing down some truth bombs, specifically when it starts talking about how's this digital journey going to impact us in a positive way, not just here, but in areas that can definitely benefit from technology. So enjoy. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Again, thank you very much for joining and sharing your sage advice with the listeners, because this is going to be I'm a big fan. I'm the president of your fan club. I am. Me. Just because you're that good. How are you doing?
Does that mean I got to send you a check?
Yeah. I'm doing good. Yeah, you do, damn it. Yeah, you do. Yeah. How you doing, my friend?
Well, trust me, I'm doing well, thanks. These are crazy times, but we're going to get less crazy here in a few months.
Don't hold your breath. I'm not a pessimist by any means, but I'm just saying there's a lot of trending things happening there that it's like different. It's just different. And by the way, listeners, real quick, what we're going to be doing, we've got a bit of a delay. Just bear with us. We're going to work through it, and we're just going to power on through, because what Bill has to say and what we're going to be talking about is really important. I think it's important. I think it. I think it's going to be a great topic for discussion. And just bear with us. We might have a little delay here and there. All right, Bill, we've had this conversation, and listeners, I've been talking about Industry 4.0, and we've been talking about data analytics, and we've been talking about IoT, and we've been talking about the cloud, and we've been talking about edge and everything all in between, and we've been talking about innovation. And it's all good. Don't get me wrong. It's all good. Yes. And you need to do it. Yes. Your business needs to really venture in that, because you'll notice with Bill, there's nuggets. There's just real valuable nuggets in data. But the question I have, and this is where we want to begin to explore, is that all of this is great, but how does it help? How does it help countries in need? Other countries that don't have the resources that the United States and other developed countries have, how does all of this Industry 4.0 help them? And that's a question to you, Bill.
So I'm going to take a weird little take on this here, Scott. I actually think some of these countries are in better shape than us. And the reason why I say that is that legacy thinking is killing how we leverage some of these new analytic capabilities and new technology capabilities and new data. Legacy thinking is something I run into all the time when I talk to CIOs. And excuse me if this sounds too harsh, but there's a caliber of CIO out there who rose to their position because they literally survived an SAP ERP implementation. Right? They survived it. Right? They took them 5 years. It took them $100 million. It cost them thousands of lives and something of value they hoped squirted out at the end. So you have that kind of mentality. And many CIOs have this, where they have this everything's a big bang approach. You got to build all the infrastructure first. You got to spend all this money first before you start getting any value. And just one way to validate that position is think how many hundreds of millions of dollars organizations have spent on their operational systems to capture and store data, and how little money in reality relative to that they spend on trying to monetize that data. It's so massively miskewed. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars capturing and storing data, and they spend 10, 20 million, you know, maybe to monetize it. It's just, so I get long answer here, Scott, but I think some of these other countries, they're at an advantage because they don't have to unlearn in order to go forward. They don't have to go through that really painful process that the human body resists. The body loves the status quo. We love to not change, right? Which is why digital transformation is such a hard problem. It has nothing to do with technology. It has everything to do with people and culture. We don't want to change. So how do you get value from this? Well, what if you're a country who doesn't have that legacy thinking and can just start off with data and analytics from an iterative sort of perspective?
I love that. I think you're spot on. And I think, and I've come in contact with that. I mean, this whole legacy thinking, I love that that term, because that's exactly, this is the way we've always done it. This is the journey that I went through. There is no way, and it's a road frickin' block. And I love the clean slate approach. Yeah, if somebody came to me and said, Scott, we want to deploy this system, and we're going to be, you know, pulling out this data and all that stuff. Great. I have nothing to compare it to, but let's do it. And I see it. But what about the economics? I mean, what about some of these countries that they just don't have the hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to deploy some of these systems and to reap the benefits, just because the economics are just not there?
Oh, I think they're in better shape. They're forced to have to look at doing this thing iteratively. They're forced to take a look at, how do I build my architecture iteratively? How do I build up my data and analytics capabilities iteratively? How do I build up my customer and engagement systems? They need to think about this iteratively. Get over that big bang approach and look at it. It's really an agile approach. Now, a lot of people say the word agile, but they don't mean agile. Agile is really about putting in place a process where you put things out there really quickly. And we've talked before, the economies of learning in knowledge-based industries are much more powerful than economies of scale. So again, I think the fact that they don't have lots of money means they've got to focus. You got to pick the right use case that has the right value for your citizens or your customers, whoever they might be. You got to iteratively build out the use cases. I think these countries are in marvelous shape. You don't need to have an army of data scientists. You need to have a few, right? And by the way, cloud architectures mean you don't have to buy a whole boatload of technology that you only need to use on Christmas Day, right? It's so much has changed. And God help us around all the open source tools out there. They're phenomenal, right? So the whole world of technology has become much more agile and nimble. Yet we have this legacy thinking approach about, well, we've always done this way. It's like my dad. Well, I had to walk to school 4 miles every 4 miles one way and 4 miles through blazing snows, and it was uphill both ways, right?
But you're right. You're spot on there, Bill. Now this is interesting, because this is an optimistic story that you're sharing with the listeners. And when we start talking about open source, I believe this innovation, this what we're going through right now, will be truly transformative for communities that are in need, that their world is going to change, and it's going to change in a positive way. You've just reestablished that by saying, hey, they don't have baggage. They don't have crap that they're dragging along with them. And they're just like, anything's better. Let's incrementally approach it and get the use cases correct and say, yep, that has value. It's a little bit more of a jump, but this one's good. Let's do it and do it right. I absolutely love it. You're good. I like that a lot.
So let me throw another provocative thought at you. What if your organization looked at technology as being disposable? That you buy technology, you suck the value out of that technology, and you throw it in the junk heap anytime something better comes along. And think about what out of technology are the real assets that we're mining from technology. Well, how I think, Scott, I'm very biased. I think the assets that these technologies deliver are data, right? Right. I have customers who have CICS systems kicking off data, right? CICS systems have been dead for years. The data is still valuable, right? And the second thing is the insights uncovered in the data about your customers, your product, and your operations. So to me, to couple along with this no baggage thing, what if you said, I'm gonna treat technology disposable, right? Because you don't know what technology is gonna be around in 3 or 4 years, but we make these technology bets. And by the way, I teach, right? I tell my students, say, oh, I wanna master TensorFlow. I wanna learn TensorFlow. I said, no, don't learn TensorFlow, learn how to learn TensorFlow. Because 3 years from now, who knows what will be the most dominant machine learning framework out there. Learn to learn. So this idea that you have to place a career bet on a technology is dead. That's dead, right? that's leeches on you to try to cure cancer. No, we don't do that anymore. And so again, we get back to this, the hindrance of, wow, of legacy thinking and how that inhibits organizations.
I love the learn to learn, but that whole disposable technology idea, it's hard for me. I can see it because I've got disposable stuff that I just like, I don't care about it anymore. But like you said, the value is in the data, and therefore there might be tools that are better able to access or work with the data and disposable technology. Are we even there yet? From industry's point of view, are we there? Holy cow. How do you take an ERP system and say that's disposable?
The question is, how do you eat an elephant? Well, one bite at a time, right? Yeah. One bite at a time. So what you would do is you'd look for pieces of that. And I'm not an ERP expert at all. Thank God I never banked my career on that, right? Wow. I would expect that there are aspects of the ERP system that you could decompose, you could modularize. Some of it could be put into, Dockerize or whatever. There's smarter people out there than me who know how to do that, who then would try to take when technology becomes disposable, technology vendors no longer have you over a barrel. And so that is what things get really tricky, is because the marketplace, the economics in the marketplace works against the user. Every one of the vendors wants to lock you in. Architectural lock-in was a strategy, heck, 20, 30 years ago. And it still sits today when you talk about all the hyperscalers, right, trying to lock you into their cloud environment. So it's vendors have always tried to lock people in. They're not our best friends. But, open source has given us more options. And open source had, open source had to wedge its way into the conversation. No vendor wanted open source. And all of a sudden, now you've got more. I can't speak specifically how an ERP implementation would become, more disposable, but I can certainly tell you how your data science platform, how your AI ML architecture better be prepared for, a lot of open source like SOAR and ML.
See, I love that. I love the open source stuff. I think
you better.
there was a book built, and I can't remember the quote. And in fact, it's a video, and it's it talks about the economics behind the open source movement. Like I'm familiar with open source ERP open EAM, and it's just open, and it's just open. Somebody's in there just cranking away, and other people they have. Guidelines of how you go into the system and all this stuff. They have protocol, but they're doing it, and they're doing it from the heart, and they're doing it with passion, and they're doing it because they think it's the best thing to do. And you get a really powerful system, and you're not handcuffed.
And it learns so quickly. Everybody's contributing. There's not like a major release every 18 months. There are iterations coming out literally every week, right? You transform control to the users, and the relationship the vendors have to build then become much more, as a service mentality, right? I'm providing this as a service to you. And I love as a service model. I love that idea that you're going to get paid based on how well I use your tools, right? I don't want to buy your products. I'm trying to get something out of that. Your product is doing something for me, and I want to pay you based on your product's ability, your organization's ability to do that for me. So I think there's all kinds of turmoil happening in this space where this legendary, this legacy thinking, disposable technology, it's all this is being thrown up in the air, open source, and the economies of learning all coming to roost in this space.
It's interesting because you're talking like with enterprise systems, it's the big thing, but maybe just from a cafeteria perspective, I just want this one, and I leave it at that. And my pricing of how I use that is so important. It's like me purchasing cable, and I only go to three channels. That's it, right? And I got 150 channels, and I go to three. I just see that might be. And talk about back to your original position is that many of these other countries, they're just not they're not encumbered by that thinking. It was like, yeah, let me give it to. And they're going to be nimble, agile going forward just because that's the way they think. That's it. It's like what it is.
Well, Scott, we talked this kind of started this conversation talking about innovation. And what I see is that if you have less liabilities and obligations, you are more free to innovate. And what I think about innovation, I have kind of this three-layer innovation model I think about. Four, I guess. First off, I believe that hope is the mustard seed for innovation. It is that little, I'm going all biblical on you here. Right? So the hope, it all starts with hope. And I think from hope, it fuels curiosity. Curiosity for what about what could life be like? I just spent the weekend working as a mentor for Women's Startup Network. We Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we had probably 72 young women brainstorming all kinds of different product ideas, deep diving, then presenting their results. Phenomenal. To me, it was so eye-opening to watch how far these young women could take an idea in 54 hours. Now, some of them didn't sleep, so they took advantage of all 54 hours. But it all starts with this mustard seed of hope. They think they can do something better. They see a need out there, an underserved need out there, and that's where it starts, this hope. And then you embrace this curiosity phase about, well, I wonder what we could do. And curiosity is, you don't need to be a rich country to be curious, right? But from a curiosity then comes creativity. And the heart of the word creativity is the word create. At some point in time, you have to create something, a mock-up, a storyboard, whatever it might be, but you start putting it out there and it's all based on agile, learn, try things, throw something out there. Does this work, right? The curiosity and creativity thing works. And then at some point you have a nugget, you've proven it, and then it moves into what I call innovation. For me, innovation is about scaling. If you have a great idea, if you have a very creative idea, if you built a mock-up that's very compelling, but you can't scale it, then you don't have anything. And innovation is only realized when you're able to scale this across the market. And scale, by the way, doesn't just mean from a technology perspective. It has to scale from a financial perspective. You've got to be able to make money at it, right? Otherwise, you're not going to stay in business, yeah. And it won't scale, right? It's got to have value to the customers, right? So I love this idea that innovation maps very well to where technology is going as far as becoming decomposable, reusable, smaller bits, this disposable technology idea that all plays together because disposable technology feeds this thing with curiosity. It feeds this ability to create ideas really quickly. And then, of course, we have all kinds of ways to scale that. You know, cloud is probably the most biggest example of how we can take an idea and scale it, you know, almost infinitely, linearly infinite, right? It's the world has changing right before us. And I watched these young women and I realized how old I was because I have this old mindset and they're you know, you can't do that. Well, not only can we do it, we just did it.
Yeah. See, I love that youth. I do. It's a beautiful thing. And you do, you realize, it's just, how they just think differently. They just look at things differently. And it's exciting for me to just sort of sit there on the sideline, listen to them talk about, yeah, you could do it. Oh my gosh, that blew my mind. And so once again, it bodes well for innovation in these areas where there's, you know, where they're not advanced, they have some capital issues, but it can be truly transformative. Before I forget, when you first started the conversation about innovation, you started talking about a couple of points. One was less liability. I was trying to rifle it off, but you were gone and you were on to hope. What were they?
Less obligations and less liabilities.
Ah.
Those are all the things that hold you back. It's like, what prevents people from doing a startup? Well, mortgage. You got mortgage payments. You have car payments. You have kids in school. You got to, so these, if you're free from, if you can minimize your obligations and liabilities, it allows you that kind of freedom to explore these things, to chase after what hope tells you to direct after access. One of the things, Scott, I'm going to throw at you too here. Another thing that impressed me about this weekend, and this was the first time I see this. In fact, I see this when I teach. And the reason why one of the biggest reasons why I teach is that when you can empower people, then you can see innovation. Hashtag culture of empowerment leads to hashtag culture of innovation. If you haven't empowered people, you are doomed as an organization. And I see these corporations all the time where the person at the top has to be the smartest person. They're the ones setting direction. Everybody else just follow along, right? And you've seen them, I've seen them, they're all around. And as I go through my job search process, I got a big crosshair on those kinds of companies. I don't want to work for somebody who already knows all the answers, right? There's no more learning going to happen here. So this idea of empowerment is everything. And it doesn't mean just empowering your executives. Yeah, hell, your executives don't know what's going on in the company. Who knows the customers better than the people at the front line? This is why, by the way, I love working with sales teams. When you talk to a sales team about what's going on with a customer, you know, they're not talking about, well, they're at this in the pipeline, at this. They'll say, well, the customer's going to do this. They're frustrated by this, blah. It's like, yes, the customer, right? So the empowerment has to happen at the front lines. If it's only about empowering your executive organization, find me another friggin' company. Thank you.
You know, you're preaching to the choir here, but you do a better job at articulating it through words, because I've always had that conversation. One, I never want to be the smartest guy in the room. I never ever want to be the smartest guy. And then two, if I can create a culture that people feel comfortable making mistakes and empowering them to truly push their abilities, and I'm not worried about somebody coming down with a hammer because I'm not the man with all the answers. I'm telling you, you truly transform that business and you create something that really resilient and prosper in the future. I just believe that.
I got to tell you this marvelous story. So one of the things in my life that I've always been disappointed about is I don't have any patents. Don't have any patents, right? And a lot of people, you know, they talk about, well, how can you be, the dean of big data, this big technology, blah, 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 without any patents? So this last gig I was on, I worked hard to empower my value engineering team and my data science team. And I brought on board a lot of people who were smarter than me. I brought on people who had different perspectives than me. I had brought on, and I created a culture where people were free to ideate, challenge each other. But at the end of the day, I was the tiebreaker. Somebody has to make a decision. But yeah. I created a culture where I try to get everybody. So I didn't have any patents. I now have my name on 7 different patents, not because of how smart I am, but because of how I brought in people who were very bright. I empowered them. I allowed them to be creative and approach things. And there's now 7 patents out there or in process with my name on it. Again, not because I'm very smart, because I'm not the smart. If I'm ever the smartest guy in the room, I'm going to a different room, because that tells me right off the bat I can't learn anything because I'm not that smart, right? So if you empower people, great things happen. And I was, this last gig I was on, I created a phenomenal team. I couldn't be more proud of what that team had done. And they collaborated. We challenged each other. And I will tell you this, my last point on this. On weekends, email, I was getting email from nobody else over weekends, except, of course, my team, because they were into what they were doing. They were late at night, early morning, Saturday. What about this idea? What about that? The ideas flowed back and forth. And that's this, I think what, again, this gets back to hope is the kernel. Is that mustard seed of innovation. If you give people hope that they can impact the business and then you empower them to do such, The results are phenomenal.
Yeah. I can't say it better myself. I mean, you know, listeners out there, man, this is a fantastic, absolute fantastic conversation. We can have the conversation about digital and digital journey and digital transformation, and we can have all that conversation, but I'm telling you right now, you don't have the right culture, and you don't nurture that culture where you don't empower people, where you don't create that. I don't care how the tech is. You're not getting that far. You might make some strides, but you're not going to hit those home runs. Tell you that right now. I love this. I'm telling you there, Bill. You're knocking it out of the park. I'm a new man because of you.
Yeah. But one of the things I like to say is, as an organization, if you don't have enough might moments, you'll never have any breakthrough moments. And so our job as leaders is to create a culture where people can have might moments. Let's try this. That's curiosity is all about might moments. Trying things out. I tell you what, this next generation coming up behind us, because they don't have that legacy thinking, they don't have the same obligations and liabilities that we have, they approach the problem differently. And it's mind-blowing, it's refreshing, and it just tells me that I need to stay young. The minute my mind turns old, do me a favor, just stick me in the ground. Just bury me right on the spot.
I'm gonna share with you just a little story about being young, right? So we go to this event, and it's just a gathering of people. We're there, we're having some snacks, and then the guys venture out, and they're going around the fire. And I'm sort of dragging my feet to go to that guy hangout, right? So I finally say, I got to go to the guy hangout. So I go to the guy hangout. I sit down. You know what they were talking about? Talking about cataract surgery, and I'm not going to be old. So I'm not, even if I have cataracts, I'm not talking about it. So the next day, I ran out and bought some Doc Martens.
I love it.
I'm not going to be old. Anyway, we're going to have to wrap this up, Bill. Now, Bill, we're going to, on this particular podcast, you'll see here, we're going to be doing a panel. We're going to be doing a panel for IoT Solutions World Congress. We're going to talk about the heart of digitization. You're going to be on it along with Rob Tiffany and Stephanie Atkinson's. We're just going to knock it out of the park just because it's going to be fun. Can people get a hold of you on LinkedIn? I know they can.
You know where to find me.
You know where to find him. He's a good-looking gent. Long, flowing hair. Talks a lot about data. You're the man. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, this was God. Great.
You were absolutely wonderful. And listeners, we're going to wrap it up on the other side because we have business to close out on the Industrial Talk podcast. So stay tuned.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right. Again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast, Bill Shimarzo. You can tell that is, and I'm sorry for the delays and everything. That's just what it's about. It is what it is. It's technology. I can't go over to his house. He can't come over here. Outside the fact that he's in the West Coast, I'm here and down in the New Orleans area. Anyway, reach out to him, Bill Shimarzo. You will not, and I mean will not, be disappointed. Now, again, I want you to put this on your calendar. It is December 2nd through the 3rd. It is the Digital Summit 2020. It's brought to you by those wonderful people at IoT Solutions World Congress. We're going to be doing a panel. We're going to be talking a little bit about how the digital age is helping communities around the world improve. That's what it's about. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly. Change the world. But hang out with people like Shimarzo. Be bold, brave, and dare greatly, and you're going to have an absolute blast. Great, great guy. Remember, Digital Summit. We're going to have another one right around the corner. So be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.